We annually service about 150,000 students, most of which through Bands of America program, about 120,000. But we do a number of other things too, which I can talk about. But our mission is to create, provide, and expand positively life-changing experiences through music. We have a vision to be a catalyst to ensure that every child across America has access and opportunity to active music making in their scholastic environment. Essentially, we are a nonprofit scholastic music advocacy and events organization dedicated to building leaders, celebrating teachers, teaching, and the art of excellence.
Welcome to the How the Heck Have You Been podcast. I'm Mark, and as the title would suggest, I just call up a bunch of people I haven't talked to forever and ask them how the heck they have been. So here's some intro music and the show. Okay, y'all, today I am talking with Jeremy Earnhardt, the president and CEO of Music for All. You heard that right. The man who used to drive over to my junior high and teach runny-nosed seventh graders how to play trumpet is now heading up an incredible national organization, only part of which consists of running the Bands of America competitions that I knew and loved so much at my time in high school. I gotta say, this episode brought a new level of professionalism to the show. It's the first on-site recording and the first time I was put on someone's travel itinerary, which is kind of crazy. In talking with him, I had almost forgotten just how charismatic Mr. Earnhardt is and how good he is at taking his ideals, these truly lofty ideals surrounding music, marching band, and general pageantry, and implementing them in the most efficient way that really maximizes the amount of lives he betters. The work he has done is pretty incredible across all fields and all levels. We met at our joint alma mater. Both of us graduated from the University of North Texas in Denton, where Music for All was having a one-day summer camp. It felt good to be around all those instruments again. And Mr. Earnhardt also brought along Miss Cindy Powell, who worked with him at Arlington ISD and is now on the Music for All Board of Directors. I'm incredibly grateful for Mr. Earnhardt and Mrs. Powell for giving me a couple hours of their time, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Oh, and one last thing. I promised I would tell Mr. Earnhardt that Steve Pratt still wants to be a fire truck, but forgot during our interview, so I got Mr. Earnhardt's reaction off the air. He said, quote, "Good times keeping a group of 200-something 15 to 18-year-olds on task, almost." Here we go. Here we are. I'm here with Mr. Earnhardt. And one of his coworkers, Cindy Powell, from previously from Arlington ISD. You're not still with Arlington, right?
No, we're
okay. So how's it going?
It's going very well, and I'm really excited to be here at UNT. So I think we have that in common. You went to UNT,
yes, sir.
As well.
Go Eagles!
So today we are having our very first BOA blast, Bands of America blast at UNT. So it's a combination, a partnership with the University of North Texas with Carolina Crown Drum and Bugle Corps and Drum Corps International, along with Bands of America, coming together. We've got about 400 kids from as far away as Missouri here today. About 68 different schools represented.
That's amazing. Yeah. It looks like it's fun. One day, one event. And the weather is great for you guys coming out, coming out here. What is it right now? I'm sure my car says 112. But yeah, that's wild. So, well, thanks for doing this. We go all the way back, to ninth, well, even Hearst Junior High, you would come and do the trumpet sectionals, which they were around the same time as tuba, but not the exact same time. Yeah. And so listeners of this podcast will all know you because it's all LD Bell Band people, because the band at Bell at that time, starting in the early 2000s, was such a incredible institution, and in most part, if not large part, because of you, I think. And of course, there's a legacy that had been building, but I mean, you, if you can speak to that, had really come in and just shaped it with discipline, with structure, and all of that.
Well, discipline and structure are not my fortes. So
I beg to differ, but we'll get into that.
Teaching is a lot like acting, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I began at Bell in 1998. And I'd actually started teaching private lessons in 95. So I was kind of adjacent and followed things along. So I actually went to my very first Friday night football game at Pennington Field. It was probably 95. So I was probably junior in college here at North Texas teaching trumpet at LD Bell. The pageantry that was happening at Pennington Field at that time right? I mean, all of it. So it was the band, the drill team, the mm-hmm. cheerleaders, the fans throwing things at the band. And I just looked at it coming from New York. I grew up on Long Island.
That's right, yeah.
Where, you know, there were no lighted football fields. So Saturday at 2 were the football games, and that's when you play. It was not the same thing.
Yeah.
I just looked at all of it, and I said, this is what I want to do with my life.
Nice.
And 3 years later, there I was. So see it and you can be it.
Yeah. So that was before college then, or was that after you had graduated UNT?
So I graduated UNT and worked with Brian Youngblood.
Yes,
At Brewer High School. For 1 year, and he had just moved from Bell to be the head director there, and they had a last minute opening, and I wound up with emergency certification, Cindy, back when you just had that. So I never student taught, consequently.
Wow, okay.
It was kind of weird. So you kind of, a way I look at the Brewer for that year with Brian and Sandra McCormick, who were fantastic, it's like everything you needed to know about life you learn in kindergarten. Everything you needed to know about band and the way schools worked, because we did all of it, right? So it was grade 6 through 12, and it was the three mm-hmm. of us. So I taught beginners, I taught the jazz band, I taught the second band at the middle school, plus the second band at high school, plus the marching band, along with Brian. So it was just a lot of different experiences.
Nice, yeah.
And Michael Boone, who was a longtime associate director at LD Bell, left, I believe, to go get his master's degree in Oklahoma. And at that time, I was just really in the right place at the right time mm-hmm. and happened to get a job that I was really not qualified for at all.
Well, you wouldn't have known it. I feel a parallel feeling, because just the arbitrariness of having stumbled into the Bell Band, right? I could have been at any other school in the area and not had a similar experience at all. So we were lucky. In fact, I remember you talking about, you know, there are some people who travel, you know, who moved to HEB to be part of this band. You know, if you ever thought we were feeling less than gratitude for the program.
You know, it's to this day such a special place. And during that time for you guys, so you graduated in 04.
Correct.
Right. So that was Grand Nationals twice.
Yep.
And then I had taken over as the head director in 2002 when...
I guess it wasn't my junior year. Yeah.
So yeah, that would have been your junior year when Joe Grzybowski retired. And I shouldn't have been given that job either. So I mean, I was 26. but we had a great team around us, right? So
oh, man, yeah.
The support system, you know, Steve Madsen at the junior high and his assistants over the years, Christine Cumberledge, who, of course, went over to... Central Junior High, and you had Joe Heiberger at Hearst, and you know Monica.
Justin Thomas.
The way Justin Thomas says it, it was like lightning in a bottle.
Yep. In fact, that's the phrase Matt Schofield used when I talked to him on the podcast. Yeah, it really was.
And just a really unique time. I almost feel like that group of people. It's like the end of Lord of the Rings when they all just got to get on a boat and go away. It's like that's what it that group of people was like that in so many ways. But what I really loved about Project LD Bell is, you know, people ask, well, how did you do that there? I said, I didn't do any of it. We did band at LD Bell the way you had to do band to be successful at LD Bell at that time with that school and that community.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to, with your guys' classes especially, build something where we went from 190 kids in band to then consistently by 2006, 300 plus.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I did not realize that.
So then there was it was an 1800, 1900 kid school, which meant that one out of every six kids at Bell was involved in the band program in some way.
You know. Yeah, because I remember Duncanville beat us often in large part because they had so many kids and they had that enormous sound. But that, I think there was about 300 in their band, so we must have been right up there with them at the end.
Well, we would talk about that at the time, that everybody needed to be accountable for their performance and learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we didn't have 50 extra clarinets. Everyone was going to need to learn their part and perform it, which I thought was a great project. What I loved most about it, now that there's some distance, is the people development aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it was music, and that was important, And what I would say when I was a fine arts director later in Irving and then in Arlington with Cindy Powell is that the music program is there to help matriculate kids through the system,
mm-hmm.
especially for band. From recruitment out of the elementary grades to completion of grade 12, you have a system of adult stakeholders that are charged with that positive matriculation to get them through the system. Mm-hmm. And one of the stats for Bell for the accountability system was their exemplary attendance.
Yeah.
Because one out of every six kids was at first period band at Pennington Field, and you didn't have a choice.
Or else. Well, the way I perceive of you was a curator of wisdom in a way, which may be a little grandiose, but you know, you always had these philosophical things you were teaching us. And in fact, I asked Steve Pratt yesterday if he had anything he wanted me to tell you. He said the phrase, "The pain of discipline now versus the pain of regret later," is in his classroom, right on the wall. And so there was that. There was, I remember you talking about, maybe it was your brother-in-law who was doing fitness at the time.
Yes.
And he was all concerned about doing every rep correctly, not just numbers of reps or weight, but doing it correctly. I still remember you telling me about that. And just being there on time and the discipline of the program and being there.
So getting and shepherding a large people organization, which is what that is, and having everyone be successful, it would go down to drink water before you go to bed,
right?
And the next morning, drink another glass of water. I was sharing this with Cindy. I said, you will eat a breakfast with at least three of four food groups represented with something that was once alive. It's like a Pop-Tart was not alive. A monster drink or whatever it was at that time was not alive. And to have that level of sustained success for so long was about being right to people, right? So that the students themselves understood that they were part of something special, but the key there was that the parents mm-hmm. saw what their kids were getting out of it. And that, to me, is what allowed ultimately for that sustained level of success, because they had to switch the PTA meetings to band booster nights.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because we'd have 300.
It was the driving force of the school. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
really and was. They didn't want to leave. I would have to play Happy Trails at the end and chew them out. I'm like, I've been here for 18 hours. Get out.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
But it was that shared love of music and performance. And at the time, I was still a fairly proficient trumpet player. And we were able to play together, and you know, not to show off or anything, but you know, play in the stands mm-hmm. every once in a while with you guys. I think that was such a unique opportunity, right? You don't, you know, Emily George didn't get to do science with you in front of everybody, right?
Yeah.
I think that podcast that you did with her made me really jog a lot of memories, especially Cindy, you might not know this, but we rehearsed at Pennington Field in the morning. And then some of the kids that didn't drive would get bused back. But mm-hmm. it was 10, 11, 12, so most of the kids had a ride of some sort. Yeah. And I would go through the halls throughout second period, making sure that all the kids were back to where they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And if they weren't passing their class, I would be sitting in their chair.
Nice.
When they got there,
no pressure.
So, yeah, and that was part of it. That academic achievement was hand in hand, right? So, we were also starting the International Baccalaureate program,
mm-hmm.
right? And I remembered when I first started in '98, E. Don Brown, the principal, started talking about it, like, "Hey, we might do this." I go, "There's no might about this. Yeah. I can tell what this is." Like,
it's all or nothing.
Yeah, do you want to go to bed at 8:15 or at 8:15? It's like, you know, you say to your kid, like, "Well, here's what you're doing." So we chose to own that. So mm-hmm. IB means in band, and we would recruit kids out of elementary school into the IB program. Each of the directors were certified in IB so that we could be your extended essay person.
Yeah.
Or
what? I remember Mr. Farrell teaching us the IB music class my senior year.
Yeah. So what we did is, before flipped classrooms were cool, was we taught that IB class like a sectional.
Mm.
after school, and then used the recording from the concert band from UIL, University Interscholastic League Concert and Sight Reading, as their work product. And this is the way I said it. Doing band at Bell and doing IB at Bell are two of the most time-consuming things that you could choose to do at that school, but they're connected in so many different ways that if you do it with us, it won't take you that much longer to do one or the other. And you're going to have, that system of adult stakeholders and those relationships where I feel great 20 years later to sitting down with Mark because we have those things in common and always will.
Well, it's funny because you taught me music theory, not for IB. I think I just took it as an elective as well, so I had it from both ends. In fact, I still remember I did the water bottle trick behind my back, pretending to crunch it. Anyway, that's one of my core memories now is your reaction when I did that.
So Pain of Discipline Now or The Pain of Regret Later was the motto of the Bell Band from the 50s.
Oh, wow, okay.
And I learned that from Jerry Longwell, who was band director for a little while, and then he was a fine arts director. And it was during an in-service that he had for us, and he said it. And I wrote that down, and I said, that is coming back.
Uh-huh.
Right? So it was The Pain of Discipline Now, Pain of Regret Later. Good is the enemy of great.
Yep.
So there was a number of isms or sayings, and he was a little bit maybe after your time, Sean Shakarami.
No, I'm quite good friends with him. In fact, we have a common friend that we know just from other things. But yeah,
he reached out on social media a couple of years ago, and he basically said that those core sayings that we would kind of live by, he's got on his wall, like in his office.
Yeah,
and you know refers to them often, and a point that I didn't get to tie together was that keeping kids healthy with nutrition, exercise, and healthful academically was the real trick. And having those relationships with the rest of the building, the Emily Georges of the world.
Yep.
And to be able to do it in a way that it was okay for the band to be so super successful because we made sure and take care of every kid through those other avenues.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it wasn't a unique thing that was banned. And this is one of the questions that I would ask as an administrator to a potential fine arts hire. How will you ensure that the rest of the building sees you as Team Blue Raiders and not Team LD Bell Band?
It's funny you mentioned that too, because I lost a ton of weight in bands. You know, if I had just been doing PE or something, because I wasn't athletics, and so I mean, it did get me healthy as a 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grader.
We would talk about at the end of the season. You are currently burning X amount of calories a day. If you continue to eat this way, when band is over,
come November.
It's going to be a little bit of a problem for your genes. So.
All right, well, let's move forward from there because I am interested in your path career-wise because it seems like kind of a meteoric rise, if I can use that, again, another grandiose term. But so you went from Irving to Arlington, so talk a little about that and the choices there.
So in 2009, we had Kirsten Jean Earnhardt. And the opportunity in Irving presented itself, and I thought, all right, I can help, and I can help to organize my daily life a little bit better than I could as a band director.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the utmost respect for high school band directors, well, any teacher, but high school band director in Texas is a lifestyle. And one day I'll write an article about being a fine arts director in a large school district and working on and getting my doctorate at the same time is not as hard as being a high school band director. It just isn't.
Yep.
And it's counterintuitive in a way, because you'd think that, you know, you move into administration and suddenly you have all these other responsibilities, not when you're talking about 300 live people.
Yeah.
And at any one time, the Bell Band cluster had about 1,000 kids in it, right? And so you're, you know, ABC, always be recruiting or whatever, however that goes. We were at the junior highs all the time also. And I tried to make it such that if you had a family of kids that were in the strata of the Bell Band, that you were everywhere. Like they just felt like you were part of their lives all the time. So that's not the question you asked, but
right,
I will continue. Started at Irving, and I said to Gwen at the time, so it was 2009, I'm like, it's going to be at least a year until they realize I don't know what I'm doing. And it turned out that many of the ways that you were able to structure and make successful over time a healthy band program, you can extrapolate that over an entire school district quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did in Irving, and then Cindy can maybe speak to this a little bit in Arlington, was you had two high poverty mid-urban school districts, right? So Irving is 80% free and reduced lunch, and Arlington is 70% free and reduced lunch,
yep.
maybe more now. And just for comparison, HEB is 50. Yep. So, I mean, this is a different world. And I would get the question when I got to Irving, what happened to the Irving High School band, right? The once proud Irving band was down to about 60 by 2006
yeah.
or so. And that's at a 2,700 kid high school.
Yeah.
I mean, just 10% is normally a percentage that mm-hmm. is commonly accepted as a healthful participation in Texas. So that should be 270, right?
Yeah.
So what we did was talked about if we put the supports in place to provide access for kids to instrumental music and choral and as well, and we filled up these programs in a healthful way, that you would have cost savings because those students were then not in small student teacher ratio electives
yep.
in their
yep.
junior and senior year.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, it's counterintuitive. I'll try not to say that a third time today, that strengthening school music programs has a positive financial implication yeah. on a school district. Cindy?
Oh, absolutely. It allows you to staff differently, even if you're not necessarily looking to reduce your staff, but it allows you to take staffing units that each school is entitled to based on their enrollment and plug more teachers into certain academic areas because you're being more efficient with how those kids are being placed, especially in those large arts programs.
So what we did was we used capital funds, bond funding, in both instances, to purchase fleets of instruments to say, here is what healthful participation should be, and we're going to make sure that that happens, that we're going to have the capital gear necessary,
yep.
and removed the instrument usage fee. So it was equal access to instrumental music education
nice.
Across both school districts
yep.
at those times. And in Irving, we wound up in 3 years increasing secondary performing arts participation by 40%. And I almost would say it this way, it was unconscionable what happened before because those kids always wanted to
yep.
do that.
Yep.
And they should have had that access. And as you know, once you have healthful participation in your performing arts, it is a game changer in terms of culture
yep.
on a campus. Not only that you have that group of kids that are highly engaged, suddenly you have parents that weren't participating at mm-hmm. all in some cases that were coming to the schools. And in some instances,
yep.
ones that, you know, maybe were did not feel welcome to come to a school before because it was a government institution.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we made it a safe place for them. I remember Austin Middle School, the Broncos, we wound up doing exactly what I just described. You wound up with a beginning band of whatever it was, 150, 200, somewhere in that range. And that first concert, the first holiday concert, remember Desiree Arias was the principal there. She looked at me and she goes, I didn't believe you that this was going to work. But she had a cafetorium full of parents
uh-huh.
that had never been part of the school culture before. So that's kind of a cool thing.
That's a really cool thing. So how many years was that in Irving?
Four in Irving, and the fine arts director position in Arlington opened in 2013. And there was some administration changes happening in Irving such that you wanted to maybe take a look. And the opportunities to do some of the things that we did in Irving and Arlington, but almost on steroids because of some other programs that I'll outline and let Cindy chime in on. So I remember very clearly my second interview with Cindy Powell and Dr. Cavazos and Michael Hill, Dr. Hill now. He got his doctorate at Dallas Baptist University. I was in cohort one. He was like in cohort 15, but who's, you know.
Who's keeping track?
And I outlined what I believed needed to have happen in Arlington to the three of them. And I'll let Cindy chime in here, but I remember Dr. Cavazos going, well, what happens if it doesn't work? I go, it's going to work. Cindy?
Well, and I'll say that in 2013, our district had implemented a new strategic plan. We were looking to really reinvent the district and really increase dramatically the instructional opportunities that kids had, really try to up our game. And so one, and Jeremy came right at the time we were starting this work. One of the real catalysts to this that helped us accomplish these things was a bond program that we were just starting to create. And Jeremy walked in the door just as we were beginning that work. And so he was instrumental with our team. We partnered the fine arts, the athletic group, the career tech, and all the academic and folks together to build a bond program that helped us leverage capital dollars to implement new innovative programming, better use our facilities, and give kids way more access to programs. One of the key things that we created was a fine arts dual language program at our elementary schools. We created two. We had two elementaries that we really didn't need anymore for enrollment. Our enrollment had changed such that we didn't need these two for traditional education. And we took these two schools and converted them into fine arts dual language academies, one on the north side of town, one on the south side of town, and made those choice schools. So we gave parents choice, you know, if your kid wants to be there, they can.
With the caveat, and I said at the time, transportation must be provided, yes, or it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, the demographic of that kid.
Yep, yep.
Absolutely. And so we provided transportation and then also took away those barriers to having instruments. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of capital dollars to buy a lot of new instruments so that any kid who wanted to be in any of the performing arts could, and whether that was orchestra or band, and then also made sure they had access to choral arts, dance, visual arts, what have you. And we outfitted these schools in a very unique way to support learning in those disciplines and integrated the arts into their academic programming, which was something very unique at the time. And then we began to build that on up, and it was so successful that in a subsequent bond program in 2019, we identified a junior high school to become the fine arts dual language.
Mark, I don't know, but the kids get older.
Yes.
Grow out of elementary. Parents ask us, well, what happens? You know, when our kid gets out of sixth grade, what do they do? And we said, well, you know, we're going to give you the path to do that. And now then the district is constructing the building addition at Arlington High School that will allow that path to continue
to
on up through high school. We connected those things with a new visual and performing arts center for the district, and the participation level has grown dramatically throughout the district. And that's that elementary program I just described is the most popular program in the district, a mile-long wait line to get in. And it's really upped the game for all of our kids.
Yeah, and it was innovation out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're in that room. It was probably just some meeting I just walked into. I probably wasn't invited.
No, you were invited.
And they're like, well, we're going to close the school. And they're like, that's a namesake school. We can't close that school. The, you know, pitchforks from the community. And it got really quiet. And I was like, okay, well, we can do a fine arts academy as long as transportation is provided. And then we identified a second school. And I said, okay, the other thing that somebody like me that has a five-year-old, I think, at the time, is looking at is language. So what if we, you know, put the chocolate and peanut butter together to make a Reese's?
Oh, my God, this is amazing.
Yeah, and it just really worked. And so that happened in tandem with the Fine Arts Center. So this Fine Arts Center was designed through programming for scholastic use rather than just another concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, everybody's got a concert hall.
Right.
So this was actually a plan that I put together in the previous district, because the superintendent said, hey, you need to come up with something to help sell a bond program. So it integrated career tech in this way. We started the nation's first public-private partnership with Music and Arts, who's an instrument retailer and a repair, for students to learn instrument repair, musical instrument repair.
Yeah.
That class is now in its eighth year, I think, and there are a number of kids that are currently working in the industry right now. But that first year that we did it, we didn't have the Fine Arts Center yet, so we just, in an old photo lab at Bowie High School, because it was a room, right?
Yeah.
We had it, and Joe Strahl, you can look him up on the Facebook, he has been teaching that class ever since, and I had an opportunity to go see that course in action when we were together for Marcella's retirement a couple months ago in May, and it's in four sections now. And so, and these are kids, right, that are not your typical, you know, music kid, but they want to be in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually one of the things that resonated most with school board members in Arlington at the time, was to marry that career tech idea, you know, to get a certification. And the other part of it was that it's a school. So in the style of a career tech center, where you're going to go from your traditional six high schools to a career tech center to learn specialized work and then go back, right? So it's not its own school.
Right.
That's exactly what they do now. Mm-hmm. So there's class piano, there's instrument repair, there's a 3,000 square foot dance facility, so they teach dance. There's 2D, 3D visual art. There's an art gallery, so that it's not like easels in a hallway, you know, outside of the concert hall.
It's very intentional. It was not an afterthought.
Exactly right.
I've seen that, I think. As I said earlier before we started recording, both my sisters teach in Arlington, or one formerly did at Wood Beckham Elementary. But I think I've seen they do a student display, I'm sure, every year. So I've seen pictures of that. It's quite impressive.
I was unable to stay long enough to open it. But Marcella said I had to stay long enough to design it. and then I was asked to do what I'm doing now. And we can talk about that in a minute. But I remember the day going into Cindy, and I'm going to get emotional about this.
Don't.
I was like, I couldn't even say anything. I just looked at her, and I just started crying. Because, like, I have to go.
Yeah.
I don't want to go, but I have to go. And that was the decision then to do succession planning with Eric Martin at Music for All. The board, you know, invited me, created a chief operating officer position to pair with him for a few years. And, you know, the idea was for him to then retire, go off into the sunset, and then COVID happened and the whole different trajectory. I say that to say this. I think doing the right thing for the right reason at the right time is something we also talked about in Bell. That is the way I tried to operate in Irving. It was the way I tried to operate in Arlington, and it's the way I try for Music for All to operate. And that's not always easy to do, but if you keep the North Star of student-centered decision-making, then you're going to be good. And then the other trick is never lie. And you never have to worry about it.
Yeah. I recently made the decision to step back from full-time teaching, and it was, I had forgotten how much the kids feel like you're abandoning them, because you kind of are, you know, you're there for years of their education, and they're like, I'll be back in a year for graduation, and it's hard to do sometimes.
And especially with, on the band side, when, you know, we started you guys in seventh grade.
Yep.
And we had you for 6 years.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's a different relationship there. And it's always weird when, or odd for me, the feeling when you guys graduate, because it feels like you're leaving us, but we also have to take care of the new ones coming in.
Yeah.
So we don't have the bandwidth to...
Right.
For too long.
To grieve. Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, we're going to work on graduation music. Y'all sit back there.
Yeah.
But it was... And very similar to the team that was together at Bell at that time, the team that was together in Arlington to be able to do some of this really unique programming. Mm-hmm. It was the way the ships all moved together at the same time for a period of years, which was very important, because we had to dream it, we had to sell it, we had to do it.
And then you build up the program with the kids there, you know, so that's not even the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I was there for the better part of 5 years, but I told Cindy, I gotta go, and that was January 1st, 2000, what, 5.5 years ago, so whatever that year was.
18?
Yeah, it was 18.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was approached by some members of the board of directors, of which I was a member at the time, I just looked at Gwen and I said, we have to go. We have watched Bands of America and Music for All programming transform a community.
Mm-hmm.
We owe it to go help and be shepherds for that to be the case for many, many more across the nation. We annually service about 150,000 students, most of which through Bands of America programming.
Yeah.
About 120,000. But we do a number of other things too, which I can talk about. But our mission is to create, provide, and expand positively life-changing experiences through music. We have a vision to be a catalyst to ensure that every child across America has access and opportunity to active music making in their scholastic environment. Essentially, we are a nonprofit scholastic music advocacy and events organization dedicated to building leaders, celebrating teachers, teaching, and the art of excellence. And we do that through our three main programs, one of which you guys are so familiar, Bands of America.
Yeah.
We are now in our 48th year. Also, we have a summer camp that we've been running since 1976. It's the last week of June, called the Summer Symposium, where this last year we welcomed about 800 campers from about 40 states. I mean, California to Massachusetts, Florida back to Indiana. And then our national festival that's been going since 1992 has about 3,000 that participate. And those are large ensembles, band, orchestra, as well as chamber music and chamber percussion. And that happens usually mid-March. And This last year, LD Bell and Central came and participated.
Nice.
And what was fantastic about that was Randy Belcher, who was an assistant principal when I was there as an assistant band director. He's the principal at Bell now. He came, the associate superintendent came, the president of the school board came.
Nice.
And one of the, you know, we do a post clinic, so it's competitive to get into the festival. Once you're there, it's a festival format.
Yeah.
So you have evaluators and you get feedback, but it's a celebration of your achievements. You're not going up head to head. It's not like Grand National Finals, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we do a post event clinic, post performance clinic with one of the clinicians that had listened to you. And what Randy said, he sent me an email, which I sent to the board of directors, that Cindy can verify this, was, "Watch, I'm so glad that I went to go see it, and I made the school board president or, you know, the other people come to the other clinics," because he goes, "Watching what happened there, it was one of those things where if I could get my academic teachers to do that," he goes, "it changed the way I will lead." That's a positively life-changing experience.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, and you're not doing it for the high school principal, but it's in effect.
Nice. So can you speak to the decision process? I mean, it was too good of an opportunity to pass up.
And you know, the thing is, I didn't even really understand, even as a board member, you don't really get what it is that you really do mm-hmm. on a daily basis. And getting to Indianapolis, and we have such a great staff and mix of folks, right? So Debbie Lafferty, our EVP of Marketing and Communications, has been with the company since 1985. Cam Stasa, our Director of Participant Relations, has been with the company since 89.
Wow.
And we have some others that have been, you know, around 15, 10 years. And then we've got, and Cindy's got to see them today, a whole cadre of folks that we've hired in the last 2 years or so, most of them were an intern with us, so you kind of get like a four-month, mm-hmm. you know, mutual tryout.
Yeah.
And then they come to choose to be with us. One of the things, again, not answering your question, but just to talk about it, during COVID, you know, we're an events company. There weren't events. So we needed to furlough about half our staff, but it was the amount that we could live with and still bring Bands of America back later,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we were going to be dormant, yep. we knew, for at least a season. And we had just hired two folks. One of them is running this event here, Jordan, in March, right?
Yeah, that was the month before. Yeah. Shutdowns for spring break, yeah.
And spring break. Jordan went and sold shoes and waited for us. And he's here today. And I think it just speaks to the what, the why, and how Music for All affects all of us. I mean, it is a Venn diagram, to be sure. And what people think it is and want to get out of it is a little bit up to them. But to my mind, 48 years of doing the right thing for the right reason at the right time through music has created what is now a music education institution, right? So, you know, 30 years ago, we were a band contest company. Now band contests are part of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
They're a big part of what we do. They're important. And quite honestly, they're the financial machine, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Events like we're doing today, we're doing because we exist to produce music education events,
mm-hmm.
right? And what we will, you know, choose to do in years to come will always go back to that, like, in what way and how many kids are we affecting? And that's the litmus test. It's our chairman of the board, Doug Polari, likes to think about it as generating music education hours, right? So you just take a Bands of America event, you've got your 32 groups, how many hours were they there? And it ultimately gets up to, in a calendar year for us, 40 million music education hours. when you
so crazy.
Yeah, there's a little bit of new math to get to that number, but still it's staggering. And what that, when you make choices about what to do next, how will that affect and stack onto that 40 million?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the answer to whether you should do it or not do it.
Yeah. Well, looks like you stole Cindy from AISD as well, so that's good.
Cindy has recently retired, although I bet she stays as busy as she was.
Yeah.
She now does consulting for bond programs.
Oh, okay. I do, and been fortunate in the last few years to work with several different districts in the state as they built their own bond programs,
mm-hmm.
and that's exciting. It's fun to continue that innovation and see those impacts on different communities, especially around our state. But then Jeremy contacted me and asked if I would be interested in participating with their board finance committee, or with the finance committee, not as a board member. And then shortly after that, I was extended an opportunity to participate as a director. And so very, very grateful for that. And it's really neat to see. I firmly believe that Jeremy's purpose on earth is expanding opportunities for kids, and this has been certainly on a very grand scale way for him to do that. And so part of the mission and our responsibility as a board for this organization is to help ensure that the organization is headed in that direction, that we are secure financially, and that we can continue to grow programming so that we continue to increase that reach in different states and different parts of the country. And it really is exciting to see and to know that you're part of something that is so impactful.
So positive,
and it's a generational thing. The work that's being done now, and you experienced it yourself, continues to impact you as an adult. And it's our hope and expectation that the experiences that Music for All brings help provide that same kind of catalyst for kids as they grow up, not just to be good musicians, but to be good citizens, good people, and to pay it forward themselves.
I think the pay it forward is incredibly crucial. I think that is another line that we used back in the back in the Bell days. There were about 10 of them to try to remember. But, and they were all mottos to, I say it, just trick people into part of, we all have to be good in order for this to work. So, like over time we got rid of like the demerit system, because it was just, well, what happens if I don't do the right thing? We're not as good as we should be. That's what happens. And that's on you.
Does it ever overwhelm you to think that you started off teaching private lessons, right? On an individual one-to-one level, you completely transformed, not maybe transformed, but you definitely played a huge role in developing the L.D. Bell Institution. Then you went to the Irving and AISD on a district level. Now you're doing it on like a national level. So you've just been changing people's lives for the better on literally every level that you could. So that's pretty incredible. Just no question there. Just wanted to pay the compliment.
All you can do in life is put yourself in the best position that you can to help the most amount of people to be successful. And it just happens that I am the third president and CEO of Music for All in 48 years. It just happened to be that I was at the point in my career that that would make sense. If I were 10 years older or 10 years younger. And so, and I think that that's important for all the old Bellites that hear this, that you don't always get what you want, but you get what you deserve. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think. And it's a tough life lesson. And I've just been incredibly fortunate for now, for my career since 1997, to be surrounded by really outstanding work professionals, and to be parts of systems that were already good. How do we make them great?
Can you speak for just a few minutes before we start to tie this up, just about personal life in terms of, do you have I like to ask about meet cute, how you met your wife, and then I also have enjoyed seeing your daughter's basketball success and trumpet success as well. And you almost kind of hinted at your decision to go into Irving was in part because you had a child now, and that's something I've experienced as a father. As a teacher, it's about affecting huge amounts of people, but then when you have a child, like, oh, here's this one person or two people that I can really build up a strong foundation for.
Yeah, when I say to Gwen and Kirsten, my job is to make sure that you're alive and successful. So. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You can call me safety dad all you want. But that's...
it's frustrating how much parenting is just saying no all of the time.
Right.
No, you cannot do that. No, we're not doing that.
So
also not that.
We are pretty fortunate that Kirsten Jean, her superpower is being nice. And just getting, not on purpose, people to like her. But that's just, she radiates. Her principal said this when he gave her the principal award at the end of school this year, that her teachers would call it, she's a human sunshine. Now, that's not a job either, right? So she's gonna have to figure out what to do with her life. So how did I meet Gwen? Gwen will tell you that we met at the Midwest Band and Orchestra Clinic in 1999 when we performed with L.D. Bell. All roads lead back to
the L.D. Bell. Yes, they do.
And I played a solo that day, and I guess the other Trinity band director had went with her, and we got introduced. I don't know. I had a girlfriend at the time. It just didn't register. Where I remember meeting her was in the year 2000. I think there's a song in there by
In the year 2000.
Yeah. it was in the L.D. Bell Band Hall. It was the Region 5 band director meeting before school started. That's back when Region 5 was huge. I mean, it spanned all the way to the colony. So when Dick Clardy was there. And the region meeting was in the L.D. Bell Band Hall. And I remember standing in the back, and I look over to the left. I was like, a girl? This is fantastic. So I was like, yeah, we should go to Don Pablo's after this. Uh-huh. And then creeped on her. At they had, back then, Trinity would do rehearsal on Labor Day. I'm like, come on.
Ugh, yeah, yes. That's rough.
But I went to the stadium, and we went to Razoo's afterwards, back when Razoo's. That was a thing. And we were together, clearly, till today. I was a little bit career driven, as you may know. And she was a high school band director too. She actually opened Arlington Seguin with Robert Poulon in 2002. So for that period of about 5 years, she was a evening band and I was a morning band, mm-hmm. and we didn't really talk or see each other, which is why yeah. we're still married today. She doesn't know who I am. And yeah. we made the conscious choice for her to change career paths. She became an elementary music teacher in HEB.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So that we would be able to start a family.
And is she still there?
She lives in Indiana now.
Oh, that's true. Yes, yes. It'd be a hard commute.
She started teaching elementary in Indiana. During the pandemic, she woke up about 2 weeks in, looks at me and goes, I'm going to be a CPA. no time like the present. So she did Kelly School of Business at IU, and she's now an accountant. She works for
nice.
Kemper CPA, which is a mid-level size.
Yeah.
I'm sure their level is great. And, you know, so we wound up with moving there with Kirsten. So Kirsten was 8 at the time and turned 9 that year. March 30th is her birthday. And so Kirsten is now a rising freshman. And as
nice,
you as
nice.
You mentioned,
yep.
the basketball. So, and that was a social decision. That was COVID summer 2000. The first thing to open up was summer AAU basketball.
Let's do whatever
said,
we can.
Get her
out of this
with
house,
kids
yeah.
her age.
Yeah.
And she just loved it and took, she's just taken off. You know, she works on her craft. You know, she, mm-hmm. we get her private lessons for,
yeah.
which we started this year because she got to the point where no one around, I can't help her with that.
Yeah.
So, and then she started trumpet the next month, right? So June was the COVID basketball, mm-hmm. and then she started trumpet in August, and it's been kind of doing those things simultaneously. The other parents were like, well, what other sports does she play? Right? Multi-sport. I said, her yeah. band. Her band yeah. is her other sport. So she got to do her very first high school performance. Brownsburg High School has Brownsburg, the town, has a 4th of July parade, Independence Day parade, mm-hmm. and she got to march in it and do all the things. We never suffered for that at Bell. We only had to do the homecoming parade.
Yeah. yeah, which was fun. In fact, I was at a friend's house. Lauren Denson was her name. She was in band for a little bit and then left that the first year. But she lives right in Hearst near my dad, near the mall. And I went to her daughter's birthday party. And I heard this marching band come down the street. It was L.D. Bell marching band in the homecoming parade. I was like, that's amazing.
They're still
or maybe
the
it was
same
the
song.
Yeah. So, all right. So I just have a couple things. We have your quiz.
Oh.
I have a paper copy.
All right.
Now, you taught me music theory, so let's see how well you remember it. Number one, a major chord is generally associated with what emotional state? A, happy, or B, sad?
We're going to go happy.
Correct.
And I do remember teaching you that.
Yes. Two, a minor chord is generally associated with what emotional state? A, happy, or B, sad?
Well, I'm going to go sad, but then, of course, diminished would be even more sad and creepy.
But that's, I'll give you extra credit for that to give you 100.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I remember there's some maybe board member or something at L.D. Bell at the time, and you brought him to, hey, Mark, can you tell him what we're learning in music theory? And I said, major equals happy and minor equals sad. All right, the only last thing I have for you is a prepared statement, which I give all my guests. Mr. Earnhardt, because of the incalculable positive influence you have had on the institutions and lives you touch, I am sincerely grateful and better for having known you. You are one of the hundreds of kind, generous, and benevolent people I know in a world where we need every single one we can get. So keep being awesome and doing awesome things.
Mark, this has been an absolute pleasure. And thank you. I love you. And all
Same.
Of
love you too.
Our students throughout the years. And let's do this again in 20 years.
All right, let's do it. I'm down. Thanks for joining us
thank
as well.
Thank you.
It's been great. All right, thanks, guys. Hey, guys. Before the outro, just wanted to remind you that the How the Heck Have You Been podcast is brought to you by the Art by Marker deck of playing cards. So I hand drew the artwork for all 52 cards plus 2 jokers. It's pretty sweet. Head over to our website, artbymarker.com, to check them out and support this one-man show. Thank you. All right, that was the show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Today's episode was recorded by Mark Dye.
Our editor is Mark Dye, and he is also the executive producer. The intro and outro music was composed by Mark Dye in high school. It's really just me doing this. To support the How the Heck Have You Been podcast, visit artbymarker.com and buy some cool art. Thanks, y'all.